Well, good morning, everyone. Thank you, or good afternoon. Thank you so much for joining us for our final quarterly UAA community virtual meeting for our coordinators. So we're so happy to have you all here. For those of you who may know me or may not know me, my name is Stephanie Ramos. I am the Outreach and Communications Coordinator for the Uniquely Abled Project. So I'm sure you've received plenty of emails from me, but that's who I am. We're also joined by Ivan, who is our founder, and we have our UAA consultants, Mike and John. So let's see. I think I kind of went through the roll call of who all is here. So that should be good. So we're going to cover briefly, Ivan is going to talk about securing funding and also our replication guide, our handy dandy replication guide, which has so much great information in it. So I'm going to go ahead and hand it off to Ivan, and he's going to do his thing and give us some great info. Thank you, Ivan.
Hi, thank you. Appreciate it. So I'm gonna a lot of what I'm going to talk about is online. I want to remind you, this is the page for the resources for UAAs, which you can access from the website. It's under resources, and then it's resources for UAAs, and all you have to do is sign in. You should all have the password. We went through an extensive revision over the last year, and this is the homepage. You see there are 10 elements plus a summary. So it's really, you want to be very familiar. I encourage you to be very familiar with this document, these documents. There's over 100 documents here, including the job readiness curriculum and a whole bunch of other stuff. And we are gonna, as we go through community meetings, we're gonna pick out pieces of this. And today we're gonna focus on element 10. By the way, these are the 10 elements that we assert are the 10 critical elements for a successful program. You gotta have all 10. So that's why we organize it this way. So element 10, there we go. And here's element 10. And it has in it, you're going to find the summary of the major terms of the licensing agreement, example budgets, some recommendations on fundraising, which we're going to summarize, some information about the sources, and the example grant application language we don't have in there yet, but we plan to. And then there's links to some sites that could have lots and lots of good information. Like here's fundraising resources, there's finding opportunities, et cetera, et cetera. So that's what's in element 10. I'm going to bop back and forth between this and just talking. So the fundamental financial principles of a UAA from which we go, first of all, there's really three. One is everyone gets their normal fee for services. Okay. The host school, service agencies, everybody gets paid what they normally get paid. Secondly, the service is provided at no cost to the trainee. And we've been able to successfully do that for all 200. And one of the questions you may ask is, how come? And that's probably personal. I've got two kids on the spectrum, and I've easily paid tens of thousands of dollars because everybody comes up with, or at least we're not, we were grow they were growing up, there were all these ideas about what might cure autism or et cetera, et cetera. Nobody knew what worked. And so we tried everything. And I swore that I wasn't going to be one of those programs that took any money out of the pockets of parents. And so far we've been able to do that. Because the third principle is all relationships are a win-win. And that's really what's made the Academy successful, including funding, because as we'll get into, for most of the UAAs, most of the funding comes from, say, the Vocational Rehabilitation Agency of the state. And for them, our experience has been the UAAs are a godsend. I mean, they really help solve a problem. So that's the that's been able to get it at zero cost. So you'll see, in as you saw in when I showed element 10, typical costs, there's a typical budget in there, tuition, salaries, marketing collateral and meetings and stuff like that, outside services, like if you do job readiness training, job placement, job coaching, and then miscellaneous meetings like for the project team. Now, some of that's already handled, like in California, job placement, job coaching is already handled. The state already does that. So as I say, there's a lot in element 10 already. I'm not going to read those, although I'll refer to them from time to time, but you'll find a lot more detail there. I'm trying to summarize what's there. Fundraising process. First thing is start as early as possible. As soon as you got, we're going to have a UAA, start thinking about fundraising. And one of the ways to do it is form a fundraising team. It's one of the 10 teams of the project team. Form a fundraising committee. Ideally, somebody from the state voc rehab ought to be on that committee. Get them invited. So they're right from the beginning. And again, our experience has been, for the most part, they accept the invitation. You also would like to get somebody with fundraising or grant writing experience on the committee. Sometimes you can get somebody with relevant experience from your hosts. All of you are with community colleges. All community colleges have some sort of a fundraising arm or services. So maybe somebody from there can sit on your committee as well. So you get that committee going. And I suggest, again, you develop a one-page summary of the mission and needs. You can pull from the website the flyers that we've already developed. It's useful for being able to hand it to a potential supporter. Here's what we're up to. Here's what we're trying to accomplish. You can just use the flyers that we've got already, or if you want, you can customize them to your use. In that one sheet, you want to emphasize what's unique about Uniquely Abled Academies. And here's what we say is unique. First of all, they're targeted at high demand career manufacturing jobs in inclusive settings. It's not sheltered workforce. These kids are going into a regular company with regular benefits, full-time jobs, and it's a career job. And we're targeting high demand, so that getting a job ought to be pretty easy. As far as we can tell, job placement continues to be close to 100%. And that is just unheard of. If you have any experience with similar agencies, I was on the board of one. We thought 30% was great. I thought it was terrible, but because I think 100% is where it ought to be, or pretty close. There's a relatively short training period. It's usually one or two semesters, 13 or 16 weeks is a semester. That's pretty fast when you can say to your supporters, in one semester, these kids go from earning nothing or working at McDonald's to being really well paid, a really great entry-level job with great career prospects. As we said, we have a high job placement success, close to 100%. And that's really, people say, well, how come? What makes you unique? It's because UAA is really a partnership of multiple organizations. It's not just one. Because again, we assert any program needs all 10 elements. And as far as we can tell, no or very few organizations got all 10. So you need a partnership to provide all 10. And that's why we think we get close to 100%. Relatively low cost, because the community colleges get funded by the state, the tuition costs are low, and therefore, on average, you're looking at $3,000 to $5,000 per individual, excluding the job placement and job coaching, which I'd say is generally covered else with a different program. again, relatively low cost to a voc rehab, if you can tell them, look, in 16 weeks for $3,000 to $5,000, you can close the case. That's pretty great for them. Again, that's in their noise level. And the last thing is we're simultaneously solving two problems. One is the high unemployment rate of uniquely abled individuals. You know, guess what? Who's paying for that? The taxpayers. You know, I didn't say they like being on welfare, but that's where they're living. And the other problem is the number one need by most businesses is skilled workforce, even in these days of relatively low unemployment rate, still need workers. So we're solving a lot of problems. And so that helps. Okay, so you got your one sheet. Then you want to identify what the committee members' personal and professional networks are. I mean, that's why they should be on this subcommittee. You want to do some research on about funding. And that's one of the couple of the links that we have on the website. There's candid.org and grants.gov. You know, that gives you a lot of information. Identify possible funders. And again, exhibit 10.5, which will show you possible sources of funders. You want to look at who's funding similar organizations in your area. You know, who has this interest in uniquely abled, in the employment of uniquely abled individuals? Find out who's funding them, because maybe they'll fund the UAA as well. And again, foundations that have a matching interest. And again, you know, on the UAA, there's a list. Here's organizations that you might go with. develop a list of sources and make lots of applications. You really want to get this organized early, because there's application dates and you want to get it organized so you get the applications. That's a very high level of what the funding process is. By the way, I should say, interrupt me at any time as we go through this. If you have a question or you even have a suggestion, you know, put your hand up or just say Ivan or something like that. So what are the sources of funds? Here's the ones, there's lots of them, but here's the primary ones in order. State and federal agencies, I'm going to talk about each one of them in more detail. That's been the number one, and I'll say more about that. Donations and contributions, individuals and businesses, grants, private pay tuition, and endowment. And private pay tuition and endowment, very rare. That's not really a big source. Okay, so you're going to see, let me go back to sharing screen again.
Ivan, this is Penny speaking from...
Hi, Penny.
Hi. What about WIOA funding? That's also a source.
Yeah, and I concluded that under state and federal.
Oh, okay.
And definitely. Okay, so this is names of possible sources of funds. Okay, as you can see, they're grouped the same way. These are specific funding sources. These are, again, links you can go to get more names. So this is all there. I'm not going to read it, but this is specific links for each one of these groups. Here's a bunch of foundations that you can go after. Okay. All right. So that's, so let me talk about specifically about each one of these categories. So state and federal agencies, okay? These are usually vocational. Let's take a look at the state or federal vocational rehab, workforce training. That's usually the names to look for. Workforce education, workforce training. They are typically glad when they find a program like us. They've, in California, the Department of Rehab is one of our biggest supporters, because they've got a problem. They're funded, you know, the legislature is funding them to find jobs for people that have employment challenges. In and in general, they're not talking about summer jobs. They want these people to have career jobs. And the problem is most career jobs require prior training. And there's very few successful training programs for the uniquely abled. And into an inclusive setting, again, I'm not talking about sheltered workforces, which are, in quite frankly, receiving decreasing interest. And that's a whole different conversation. So they got a real problem because there's no training facilities as far as, so they're having trouble placing people and pleasing their legislature. You come along with the Uniquely Able Academy and say, look, for 3,000 to 5,000, which is in their noise level, you can close the case. They are really happy. It makes them look good. And I'm delighted for Work Rehab to take all the credit. You know, I'll take their money, they can take the credit. So it's really a win-win. So, you know, vocational rehab could be one of your biggest partners. Okay, so for the states, look for a vocational rehab, state community redevelopment, and stuff like that. Those are the key words. Every state has got workforce rehabilitation, vocational rehab. For federal, look for a workforce investment board, workforce development board. That's where Penny was on, but the WIOA, that's federal funding that comes usually, all this stuff usually comes through the states. For workforce development finder, you can go to a website, www.careeronestop.org. That's careeronestop.org. That's to locate the workforce development boards in your area. Also look for U.S. Department of Labor and National Science Foundation grants. Craig from yes. Dallas got yes. an NSF grant, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So
$640,000.
Yeah. So it's definitely possible. So yes, just because you're a small community college doing a small program, don't think you can't get an NSF grant.
You can.
Okay. So that's state and federal agency. Donations, that's been the major contributors. We've gotten Goodwill has also been a contributor. Mike, they're a major contributor at College of the Canyons. Isn't that right? Or they were?
Well, yeah, our major contributor is DOR and also AJCC, America's Job Center mm-hmm. of California. And they use WIOA funds to fund us. So it's 50-50 between those two agencies.
Yep. Okay. Donations and contributions. These others have not been a major source of funding for UAAs, but they're there. You can contribute, you know, solicit from industry, related nonprofit organizations, and parents. You can conduct an annual appeal or an event. The UAA graduation is a great opportunity to make donating available. You don't want to make a big deal, but hey, you know, invite the parents. We open to donations, okay? Another source of donations is the manufacturer of CNC machines, such as the Gene Haas Foundation. They are, you always got to apply to the Gene Haas Foundation because what they love this program. And they provide scholarships. That's their focus. And sometimes they provide buildings. I think Penny, didn't they make a big contribution to your building, as I remember?
Penny had to sign off, but yes, at Hudson Valley, we do have a building named after Gene Haas.
Yeah. So, you know, particularly most community colleges have Haas machines. So it's really great to ask for money from them. And then there's also websites that support receiving donations of individuals such as Beneviti, B-E-N-E-V-I-T-Y, and WePay. There are places where like a company can say, if you want to make a donation to this organization, you can do it through them. Now, you got to be aware that most people don't know what CNC machines are. And they don't know about the high unemployment rate among those with autism. So some portion of your fundraising ought to be educational. You want to let people know about this. So there's lots of stuff on the website, on our website, to educate people about these two things. Both videos and articles are on there. There's also videos, we can get them, and stories of individuals who have taken the program and the life they have. There's a great one from Milwaukee about this girl that took the program and said changed her life. So those are all things you can use. Visits to the UAA can be also very beneficial, inviting donors and foundations. Point out any state-of-the-art technology you're using to let them know you're staying current with industry needs. And during any site visit, make sure the students have a chance to say hi. Tell them they're your best salespeople. When somebody looks at the face of these students and the excitement they have and the satisfaction they feel, and it's a whole different bag, okay? Then grants. Well, okay, you could say grants from NSF and stuff like that. So those are also great sources from foundations. There's, again, lots of foundations out there now that are focused on workforce. Let's see. Oh, the other thing you want to look at is banks and Community Reinvestment Act funds. So the Community Reinvestment Act, or the CRA, is a government act that was passed decades ago when Congress got annoyed that banks were taking money out of communities but not putting any money back in, particularly low to moderate income communities. So they passed the Community Reinvestment Act, and that says each federally chartered bank gets a CRA rating on how well they are investing in low to moderate income communities. And when any bank asks any government agency to do anything, that agency must look at their CRA score and use that as a part of their decision-making, where they're going to grant what the banks ask him to do. So it's really important. Every national chartered bank has a CRA officer who's in charge of investing. We are a perfect investment for banks, because what they can do is say, look, we gave $10,000, $20,000 to this organization, and look at the number of kids that went from zero to a living income. Banks love us. So you want to go to the banks, and that, again, the people on your committee, what banks, particularly if they're in business, what banks are they using? Let them go to those banks and say, hey, look, you know, we're big customers of yours. Here's a nonprofit I'm very involved in. It's a win-win. You get the great, you get helps in your CRA score. We get the money. So definitely, and on the website, there's a flyer that you can use for the talks about CRA. It's, that flyer is directed at banks, and you can pull that down and use it.
Ivan, this is Kristen Underwood from South Central College. I have a question just about unifying, like, together as a group to get resources. We've talked about this from, like, our CDL consortium perspective and within the state of Minnesota. Like, how can we band together then to apply for funds, because we're maybe more apt to get funds at that level? I'm just thinking through too, like, we can all go for, like, this funding separately, but is there value in coming at it together? And then I don't know how distribution would work. That would be something to kind of figure out, but I don't know how to say this. I'm like, I don't necessarily want to compete against other UAAs for funding. Like, I want us to work together for funding that we can all use together. And I don't know if we'd have a better chance, like, if, like, NTMA gets tapped, like, three different times, or maybe it's just a local chapter, so maybe that's okay. But do we have a better shot of getting more funds if we go more of, like, that national route?
I don't know. Cheryl, you're on that. Can you want to say, speak to that?
Sure.
Oh, sorry. Let me intro Carol briefly. We're going to open up the floor for questions, so we'll definitely get to your question, Kristen. I just want to intro Cheryl. She's one of our board members, and she also has over 20 years of experience in higher education, grant administration, strategic planning, proposal development, federal grant writing, and proposal review. So Cheryl is a very valuable resource to us, and so I wanted to give everyone the opportunity to also potentially utilize her knowledge and experience with any questions that you may have, and hopefully Cheryl can kind of help us direct the conversation in that way. But I just wanted to briefly intro you. Cheryl, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to meet with us and answer a few questions in this discussion. So I'm done.
Cheryl, do you want to take a chance at that question?
Sure. I mean, all the things that Ivan's been talking about is 100% of what I do in my profession. So if there are any questions offline about any of those particular sources or strategies, but my first thought, and I just dropped it in the chat because I wasn't sure when you wanted me to chime in, but we just went through a huge Department of Labor funding cycle, which now won't come up for a while again, but the Department of Labor, NSF, a lot of these big federal grants are definitely looking for a national impact. So it does make sense with some of those types of opportunities to come in as what we might call a consortium. So in other words, a group of colleges with maybe, UAP being the lead, or in some cases, it might make sense for a college to take the lead if they are an eligible applicant, but where a nonprofit is required under the true sense of the word. And sometimes colleges are considered a type of nonprofit, whatever makes sense as far as who the applicant should be. But the opportunity for consortiums and collaboration makes for a much more competitive proposal. And then of course the scope and span of impact makes the most sense because the UAP is providing an opportunity for us to work with several community colleges. So it really feeds right into all these opportunities. We can go after MEEF grants and such, but I think it might make really good sense to look at some of these larger ones that actually help you as a community college fund these services. And that's a strategy that I don't know that I'm new to the board this year. So I don't know that we've taken this approach prior, but I know we've briefly kind of tossed that idea around. But my first thought in working in this field is to do just that. Consider how we may be a catalyst for helping the community colleges find funding opportunities that then in turn help you to fund the programs on your campus. And with me, not only on the board, but I'm also, available to support you as an individual college with the development of these grants, even if you have a grants department. Most of you that have grants departments probably know that when you're tapped out, you're tapped out. And if you don't have a grants department, there is usually a need for someone to come in and kind of help you with this. So it would be kind of a mutually beneficial opportunity for both our organization, but also, you as individual colleges.
Cheryl, yep. this is Craig. Let me chime in. We went after an NSF grant for a single institution. Mm-hmm. So we got the maximum there, but can't we link several campuses together, UAA campuses, and go after?
Yep. Yes. That's exactly what I was kind of suggesting. Is you can definitely go after any of these kinds of federal grants as an individual college, which probably many of you have. But the flip side of that approach would be to go after those same kind of grants as a cooperative, with several colleges involved. Mm-hmm. And then you can basically then open yourself up to greater amounts of funding, and each of the community colleges would then essentially be partners on that grant. Either the fiscal lead could be UAP or a fiscal lead could be one of the colleges. Mm-hmm. Either way. So there's a couple different strategies there, but it would definitely then kind of up your competitiveness, for sure. I'm excited about it because this is what I do all the time. And this is an organization that, not that I don't, I'm not passionate about a lot of the projects that I do for community colleges, but, this particular program is the reason I joined the board, because this is a personal interest of mine. I also have a son on the spectrum, so there's a little bit of that But I love the combination. It's a great opportunity to work within a program and services that I personally believe in, yet my professional work is predominantly 99% with community colleges and federal grant development. So it's a great match for me. It gets me excited on two different levels. So I could talk about this all day. You know, Mike knows that, and a few of you probably know that, but anyway, this is my wheelhouse. So
Cheryl, does it make it stronger if there's something connecting the colleges, either all the same state
It really kind of depends on the source of funding. You know, with some of these federal grants, they're really looking for a national impact. So the ability and opportunity for you to work with colleges out of your own home state makes it more competitive. And so that is a true collaboration. You can collaborate within the state or a region, but it really depends on the focus of the grant. So if the grant is looking for kind of a regional impact or state impact, then that would make sense. If you're going after, you know, Department of Labor or Commerce even, or NSF, even Department of Ed, you know, we have a whole bunch of Department of Ed grants coming up and starting in January. Right now we're in kind of the NSF season, but after that, it's going to be Department of Ed. So the national scope, the national impact of what we're doing, it just makes perfect sense. And yes, they are looking for in and out of state cooperation and collaboration.
So if a community college is interested in such a collaboration, would be you connect you or connect Stephanie or either one?
I guess probably both of us to make sure that, you know, we're aligned, you know, with our organization here. But absolutely, I do this full time outside of the board. So if that's something I can be supportive, you know, with you as an individual college, you know, please contact me. And then we can work on a strategy that, you know, would help you to find ways to fund the UAA programs.
Yeah. So if you're a community college and you're interested in this collaboration idea, contact either Stephanie or Cheryl, and we'll move forward from there. Okay. So that okay? Anything more on that idea? Like, Kristen, you were the one that brought that up, right?
Yeah, that was super helpful. Thank you.
All right, great. I think I'm almost done. The last two items on my list was private pay tuition and endowment. Yeah, you can do that. You know, parents can pay. You saw one of my principles is avoid it at all costs if we can. And then endowment, community college typically have an endowment. I don't know whether they can be used for a program like this. If the UAA is a separate corporation, which is very rare, it could also create an endowment where people can contribute. That's about it. As you learn more about fundraising and sources of funding, you know, we don't know it all, that's for sure. So we really would appreciate you and make any suggestions, additions, send them to me and I'll get them onto the website so that other UAAs can benefit from them in element 10. And with that, Stephanie, I'm done.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Ivan, for filling us in on all of that information. And if you need the password for the website, just email me and I can let you know so you can get into our resources and the replication guide.
I saw Cheryl. Cheryl, did you have your hand up?
Oh, I did. Just real quickly on the endowment, and it won't be a lengthy response, I promise.
No worries.
On some of the Department of Ed grants, there is the ones that are coming up in January, the Title IIIs and Title Fives, we call them, their capacity development grants. There is an endowment option on those grants for colleges. It's not scored any differently. It's an optional thing that you can do with those grants, and you can set up, the colleges can set 20% aside of the total funds requested and create an endowment that could be potentially used towards something like this or other things on the college, like scholarships or helping low-income students, things like that. So I just wanted to mention that.
Awesome. Thank you, Cheryl. We definitely have time for any few more questions if they are out there. But again, if you think of anything after the fact, you can feel free to email any of us and we will do our best to address those things. Thank you again, Cheryl, for all of your input. It's much appreciated. As I'm sure you all can see, she is a wealth of knowledge and information. So we're really glad to have her on board. I'm going to open up the floor if anyone wants to share any updates, pertinent updates from your location, or if anyone's having any challenges, feel free to either drop it in the chat or just, you know, turn your mic on and share. But we have a few minutes if that is of interest to anyone.
This is Craig. I had one question was brought up in one of our meetings to in the student evaluation. And one of them was requesting health information as the student's level of autism. Were they been evaluated by the family physician or whatever? We're having a little struggle with that because our school is open enrollment, so they take anybody in, but the UAA is a different situation. And so how do you request that when you do the evaluation or the application? Or can you even request that?
Is this the application for the UAA or for the school?
Yeah, UAA.
And who's pushing back?
The school is a little bit because they think we would be infringing on, you know, personal, we get too personal or with the student. But Dr. Tran's good with it. We're just trying to figure out how to really get over the school's philosophy.
And, yeah. What you might do, and I think this is in a lot of places. Mike, you may have something to weigh in on this too after I get say something. You might drop, first of all, you got to know whether they have autism or not. That you could just say, have you been diagnosed for autism? And then what you can say is, must be able to function independently in an industrial setting.
Good.
You don't have to ask about levels or anything like that, you know, and are you able to, or, you know, is there any concerns about you able to, but you've got to operate by yourself in an industrial setting. You have to be able to understand and follow safety rules, how to run a machine, all that kind of stuff. And that may be a way of getting around asking for where they are on the spectrum. Okay. Mike, Good. You want to say something about that? You face that, I think.
Yes. You know, it all boils down to safety. And and it's integrated into the recruitment process of making them aware of the environment that's going to take place. Not only them, the individual, but the family. When you have a information session, open house, orientation, whatever you call the event, and have everyone there, it would be nice to have them be exposed to the manufacturing environment, the site cell, the sights, the smells, and the sounds, and wearing the earplugs and the eye protection, and then the dexterity of being able to use a micrometer and a caliper. All those things are requirements through the training process. And then the interview process of, you know, does the individual really want it, or is this a mom and dad desire?
Right.
Anybody can apply, but they have to be on the spectrum, and from a safety standpoint, and from a compatibility standpoint, they have to be compatible to the environment. So, we
give a safety test for all our students that go through our regular program. And we'll give that same safety test. They have to do an 80 and above to get into the program, get into the lab even. Would that be okay to do that?
Sure. Any data point that you can gather, collect, would be valid.
Yeah, because we need, the lawyers get involved, right? And so we need something where to show them that this student understands the safety rules and everything else.
and they passed the test with an 80 and above. So they're cognizant of what's going on in there.
Well, particularly if you give that same test to the neurotypicals, it shouldn't be a problem.
No problem there.
Yeah, I think you want to look at where are the potential, for example, where are the potential issues? You know, instead of saying level one autism or HIFON or any of those terms which are not useful today, look at what, you know, they got to be able to receive and take and follow criticism. You know, have to be able to follow the rules, which is usually not a problem, but they got to remember them. Got to have certain, as Mike said, physical dexterity in the sense of lifting and putting in. Got to like working with your hands. Got to not mind getting dirty and being around noisy machines. So you're listing the issues rather than trying to, because quite frankly, the levels are almost meaningless. I mean, in a broad sense, yeah, okay, we're not going to go for level threes, but you know, what used to be called level threes. But even within what used to be known as level ones, there's people that are that would not make it. So looking at what are the rules on anybody, whether you got autism or not, you got to be able to handle criticism.
Yeah. I've got one student in a regular program because it's open enrollment. The guy's really sharp. Math, dexterity with the hands, the projects he does are all right up there, A's. One problem is he doesn't communicate. He whispers very slowly. You almost have to get right next to him to hear him. There's no, when you say something to him, do you understand what I'm saying? There's no response, he's eyes or anything. And so that really is a stumbling block. He's got to get over whatever that is. We talked to his mother and she says, well, he's just shy. He has to get to know you and then he'll open up. Well, he's been this way for the whole 16 weeks. So he's
not opened up yet. In your UAA?
No, in our regular.
Okay, so that may be. So here's one of the things we found. These kids come into the program mentally abused.
Yes.
Really by the public school system.
Oh, yeah.
They've been jeered. They've been insulted.
Yeah.
They've been told they haven't been given the right supports. I mean, my son is a great example. My son has 140 IQ, but had a hard time paying attention to a verbal-only presentation. He would drift off. So what he needed was somebody just sitting next to him saying, come on, Daniel, you know, pay attention, and you get back in. Well, in LA, if you want a one-on-one, you have to be in the special needs group.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So he's in with a group with kids who can't talk, who can't communicate, and that's the classes he's in. Now, what do you think that did to his self-esteem and his learning?
Yeah.
We were luckily able to get him out of that. And he got into what's called a 2E school with twice exceptional kids that have learning issues and are also really smart. He comes home the first day and said, Dad, for the first time in my life, everywhere I looked, I saw me. That's what we get from the UAAs. For the first time in their life, that's why we make a big deal about everybody in the cohort has to have the same diagnosis.
Right.
Most of us, we wouldn't even think about that because as we've grown up, there's always been people around us that it never even occurred to us, not to them. And what happens in those 16 weeks is transformational. John has a story about a kid who, when he came in, he was like your student. He was so scared of social interaction that if you said, hi, John, he went like that. Physically afraid. And John says by the end of the 16 weeks, you couldn't shut him up. You know, and that's what typically happens. We saw it with the girl in Milwaukee. It's a transformation. So that kid that you're seeing, you know, had he been in a cohort, might be different. Now, what I would suggest for that one kid, find out what may work for him in acknowledging that he heard. you know, what
we tried the thumbs up deal. That kind of worked a little bit, but then I got to thinking about it. The kids, like you say, your son's 140. That was kind of insult. I would think that'd be kind of insulting to him. You know, it's like, I have to do thumbs up all the time. I understand what you're saying, you know?
Well, that's okay. Look, but you want to ask what works for him.
Yeah.
Don't you worry about what you would think about it if we asked you to do it.
His mom says he's going to some special deal for speech and that kind of thing. And then they had him work at one of the plants that I'm very familiar with, and they took him on for the summer, but they didn't ask him to come back because they really couldn't communicate with him.
Right.
That's for safety, more safety. Mm-hmm. Do you understand what I'm saying about don't touch that? And if you don't get a response, you don't really know. You know, it's hard.
So I'd ask him what works.
So maybe his mom. The guy plays musical instruments, and I mean, the guy's unreal. But just one thing, we're trying to break through that.
Yeah. Anybody else have any suggestion for Craig?
One thing that we did, we don't even ask it in our application if you have autism or not. The whole program is advocated for people with autism. And I asked parents in the beginning, like, I want this to be specific for people with autism. I don't want anybody just coming into the program for a free program. They're like, no, you don't understand. Like, people don't do that. So we're okay with that. But we have a connection with VRS or Voc Rehab, and they have to do all the vetting in order to get into their program. So they basically manage that process for us. And then they have to make sure they are diagnosed. They have all that information. They keep all the information. They know what to do with it. And so I don't have to use it. I don't have it on my application, but part of our process is, and I can't force them to go with VRS. That's one thing that I was like, can't I just make it a requirement? They're like, not technically. But what we do is we have a carrot. So like it's $2,700 per student that VRS will pay for us. So we say, well, you could pay $2,700 or you could enroll in VRS, which is wraparound services and amazingness and all the things. And then it'll be paid for you. So like, okay, sounds good. So I suppose if someone didn't like refused VRS services and then they applied with us, like someone could sneak in, but ultimately it's up to VRS to kind of vet that for us. And then they can also, with their counselors, worked with the person to say if they're going to be successful in the field or not. So they do some of that vetting for us. And then we interview them as well and have kind of a process with open houses and such to kind of gather some other information about the person in order to say if they're going to get into the program or not. But that's worked out really well for us not to have to manage that information.
Okay. Great idea.
Awesome.
Thanks, well, Craig.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Kristen, for that input and Craig for sharing as well. Just to be respectful of everyone's time, it looks like we have about 10 minutes left in our meeting here. So any further questions, feel free to email anyone connected with the UAP and we will do our best to answer them all. I just have a few orders of business that I wanted to cover before we wrap up here.
Stephanie, I mean, if we have the time, I just thought I might share what our goals are what our programs are for the next 2 years.
Sure. Yeah, of course. Go ahead.
Okay. So we made our proposal to NEEF to renew our funding, which has been a primary funder for us. And in there, we proposed the following programs. One of them is to continue the growth of the CNC UAAs. Excuse me, we promised 10 more. I think we'll do that easy. This second one was to expand the robotics UAAs, which Mike has started, just graduated. Has that first cohort graduated yet, or they're about to graduate, right, Mike?
They're going to graduate tomorrow from a robotic technician class.
Already planning a second cohort, I believe, right? In robotics.
In January.
Yep. So that's the pilot program. Yeah, our intention is to then move that across the country. And then we promised a third vocation, which we're exploring. And we've got a whole bunch of them that we're looking at. And if you got some ideas, we're open to it. But on that list is semiconductors, cybersecurity, General IT. I forget some of the others, but we're looking at an expansion for autism. The other program we're very actively in, there's something Tooling U has a certification called the CMFGA, the Certified Manufacturing Associate. And that's a certification for jobs that don't require prior training. So it's usually there's 25 modules on the website that people can take to get that certification. And that tells a manufacturing firm, these people are okay. They can work in a manufacturing environment. And we think that's going to be really valuable for people that maybe are not as up for like a CNC machine operator. We're very actively looking at that. We're looking at a program in Kansas City Star.
That's John from and it just says the Excel program. This is Dr. John Cash from Bridgewater State University.
Yeah.
We are doing Tooling U right now. So with our students, and it's working out very, very well. I have a couple of graduate students that are actually helping to deliver the content, and the students pick it up very easy. It's very clear. It's a very clear presentation. And they, for the most part, they work autonomously through the modules with just a little bit of support from my staff.
This is the UAA students, right?
Yes, yes, UAA students only, yes.
Yeah, the program we're talking about is, and we encourage use of the Tooling U in UAAs. This is a separate three-week program that's just for people that aren't ready for a UAA or aren't ready for that level of operation. And it would probably, we're going to start with autism, but it'll probably extend to other diagnoses or other employment challenges. For example, Goodwill in Kansas City has got one for actually people that are incarcerated that are getting ready for discharge, and taking them through that so that they can go right into a job or ready for it. So we're working on that. And then we're also working on apprenticeships, and we're looking at making apprenticeships for uniquely abled. So the program we're looking at for CMFGA is for uniquely abled individuals. So that's what we're working on. So it's going to be a busy 2 years. Hopefully we'll get the funding from MEEF to follow that up. And clearly, if any of you are interested in any of those things, well, you already got the CNC program, but if you're interested in the others, let me know. And with that, Stephanie, over to you.
Awesome. Thanks, Evan. Yes, lots of things happening. With so much going on, I just wanted to take a brief moment to request that anyone that has graduations potentially upcoming, if you could just maybe throw it in the chat or shoot me an email. I do my best to keep the statuses of every location on all my little spreadsheets, but sometimes you can slip through the cracks. So if anyone has a graduation coming up in the next, couple months, please let me know. We love to receive photos and any blurbs that you might have so we can share it in our newsletters and on our social media, because it's a big accomplishment and we want to brag about how awesome our students are. So please don't hesitate. We would also encourage you guys to potentially consider writing up a press release and sending it out to any local news outlets in your area. If that's something that you need help with or want, assistance researching places that are local to you, please don't hesitate to reach out to me. I will be more than happy to help out with that. And then just to wrap it up, we really, really rely on metrics, especially in our grant application and funding efforts, which means it's really important that we collect our student demographic surveys for every cohort, as well as that Google Doc, which I'm sure everyone has a love-hate relationship with, but we really appreciate and rely on all of that student data. It's really important for our marketing efforts and for our funding efforts to just have that historical data. So please, please, please be sure that you're keeping that up to date. I'm going to be working on kind of streamlining a lot of our data collecting processes for the new year. So things might look a little bit different, but I appreciate everyone's flexibility and help in getting all of that to us. And then we recently passed in our board meeting a UAP language guidelines document. So I will disperse that to everyone, but that's just kind of helping everyone to stay on the same page as far as what kind of language we're using when we're describing those within the autism community, just so that there's consistency across the board. And we're all on the same page, because I know Ivan briefly touched on how certain phrases or words just kind of aren't, you know, in or helpful currently. So we're just trying to be progressive and listen to what this community is telling us how they want to be identified, so we can be supportive in all of those ways. And then lastly, last thing, there was some feedback regarding an interest in having a meeting for instructors only. So that is something that we're going to be hopefully hosting some time in the new year. So we have heard that feedback. We hear you. We're going to try our best to make something along those lines happen. And I think that is all for my updates. And we'll see. Yeah, Mike, do you have a question?
I just wanted to make sure Kristen got her question answered about what type of NSF grant Greg was successfully awarded. I think she asked the question.
Okay.
Was there a type of NSF grant?
No. Pull up. I'll get it into you guys.
Okay.
And if anybody needs help with that, we've got grant people that at our college that wrote that all up. It went through rather quickly, actually. Because this is an organization they want to be attached to. I mean, this is fantastic, right? So the UAA program for NSF was perfect.
Greg, if you want to send us a copy of that grant, we could even post it in Element 10 so anybody can get access to it.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome. That'd be great.
And, real quick on the NSF, some of you might already know this, Craig, it might already be on your radar. But there's one going out on tomorrow, but there's also two more coming up. There's one coming up mid-January, which is a STEM-focused NSF grant for non-underrepresented minority colleges. So if a college does not meet that status already, there's sort of like a version for those colleges, and that one's due the 17th. Then the URM version of that, which is underrepresented minority colleges, predominantly Hispanic in this case, there's another one due on the 14th of February. So they just keep coming. They've been coming since probably September, at least one a month. So we've got two more in this big push, and then it'll probably start shifting to Department of Ed. And the initiative numbers on that, Craig, in case you do have somebody working on that already, they might already have this, but the STEM related one due the 17th, the proposal number is 23-510. And then the HSI version of that that's due in mid-February is 22-611. And those are both NSF grants. So there may be some opportunity there on those two coming up.
Okay. It's
a little tight for January, but you never know. If something's ready to go, then you might be able to get it out.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
You sure will. Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for all of your hard work in this past year. And we're looking forward to 2024. Thank you again for all that you do and for being here. So great to see all of you. Wish you all a happy holiday and break. And again, we're here anytime. So if you have any questions, feel free to reach out. And I look forward to seeing everyone in the new year. So thanks, everyone. Have a good one.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Bye.
Bye.